You are listening to Help for HD Live, the first podcast created for families living with Huntington's and juvenile Huntington's disease. Don't forget to find us on iTunes, Blog Talk, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. You can also search over 500 archived episodes and other projects at helpforhd.org. To watch us in person, find Help for HD TV on YouTube and subscribe and ring the bell for notifications on new content. Help for HD Live is going on air in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Hello, everyone. Thanks so much for tuning in to Help for HD Live. This program is made possible because of Teva Pharmaceuticals, Neurocrine Biosciences, and the Griffin Foundation. I'm your host, Lauren Holder, and today we have Meredith Patterson on with us. She has been a performing artist in the entertainment industry for over 2 decades, starring on Broadway, guest starring on TV series for ABC, NBC, CBS, and roles in feature film, my favorite being The Princess Diaries 2 Royal Engagement, performing on stages all over the world. And she is also the producer and host of a successful podcast called Confessions of an Actress. She has guests from all corners of the entertainment industry, as well as her own insight and observations of life as an actress. Her first and second book in the series, Confessions of an Actress from Chorus Girl to Broadway Star and Sunday Letters from Moscow, are currently available on Amazon and Audible. And she's currently writing her third book in the series about her adventures in Hollywood, which is due to be released in 2025. But she doesn't stop there. She is also a producer. So after honing skills on Broadway and in Hollywood, Meredith decided to expand her career in entertainment and launch her production company, Mary Productions, which is named after her childhood nickname, pronounced Mary, bringing joy and elevated entertainment to audiences. But today, she's joining me to share about her own family history of Huntington's disease. In May 2022, Meredith partnered with the HDSA for their Let's Talk About HD campaign. You can find that video on YouTube. She's also a part of the large annual Freeze HD event. If you haven't seen those photos or what that event is, which I believe most everyone in the community has, check it out. It's really, really amazing to see all of it. So Meredith, I'm so very honored and excited to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for joining me.
Oh, you're so welcome. I'm so happy to be here.
So let's talk about HD. So how does HD affect you and your family?
Oh my gosh. Well, HD was something that, you know, I knew my grandfather had passed away from. My grandfather was in the Navy, and he, I don't know, actually, I believe his parents were, him and his sister actually both passed away from HD. So, and they were the only two siblings in the family, but I'm not quite clear about their parents, like my great grandfather and great grandmother, because it was not really talked about. So the history of my family with HD kind of starts with my grandfather and my great aunt. And it was really, my family was very open with talking about it. My mother was really open with talking about it. And we kind of knew about it as kids, but it wasn't really, you know, outside of our family, it wasn't really talked about. I didn't know anybody else who even knew what it was. And this is before the internet, so there was no way to look anything up. So it was just kind of, we knew that Grandpa and our great aunt Carolyn had passed away from this disease. And as I got older, my uncle, Richard, I never knew him as being healthy, but we would go to the hospital and see him. So he was at the VA hospital in Northern California, and we would go see him. And it's weird because the rest of the family, as far as I know, wouldn't go see him. We actually would bring him home for the weekend. So when I was old enough, like I was a little bit scared of my uncle because he was probably in stage 3, stage 4. But I just thought he was really funny because my parents would sit around and talk with him and totally could understand everything he said. And I'm probably 10 at the time. And you know, it was just this thing where it was not out of the ordinary to sit and talk with him, even though it was hard to understand him. And he had been shaking. But I found out later on, my dad and my mom were really the only ones who took him home and had him with family for a couple days. We fed him pumpkin pie. I do remember that. And my dad, actually, I found out later, would help him shower and shave him and like take care of him. And it just, to me, that just endeared me so much to my parents, even more so. And then the last person in my family who had HD was my cousin Carolyn, who was my Uncle Richard's daughter. And she's one of three, but she was the only one that came down with it. And I watched her from being healthy all the way through to the end. And it was such a difficult time and so hard to witness, but she didn't have any children. So the disease in my family died with her. But I, throughout my family history, I said to myself, I am going to do everything I can to bring a voice to this. And my mom was actually the first one in my family to be tested. This is back in like 92, 93. And I had graduated high school, wanted to go off to New York and be a dancer on Broadway. And my mom was getting this test done. And I thought, if she's positive, I'm not going to go because I need to spend as much time as I can with my mother. And that summer was so just unbelievably, you know, the community knows this feeling of walking on eggshells. But my mom was the bravest of, I literally don't know how she did it mentally. And I talked to her a lot about that feeling. She just said, I just need to know. I need to know. And this test came out. And it was the first time she was able to do it. And she has a brother and he didn't do it either. But, you know, she said, I watched my father die of it. I watched my aunt die of it. I want to know if this is my future. And for us kids, because I'm one of four. And she, that day when she came back and got the test that she didn't have it, it was a new lease on life. And I was 18 at the time. And it was that moment that I said, I'm going to go off and live my life and be all the things that I can possibly be fearless in this world. And I'm going to speak about HD as much as I possibly can. And I went to New York, started on Broadway. I did Curtains Up for a Cure there with Katie Moser. If you guys in the community know her, she's the most amazing person. We did that show to bring awareness to HD. And any chance I get to talk about it and be a part of the community and do the Freeze HD event and all of that, I dive right in. And it is something in my family that I know is now the line has died in terms of the disease, but I will never stop speaking up about it and supporting the families and supporting speaking out about it. Let's talk about HD. That when you said, let's talk about it, that is what I will always do.
Well, and you know, first off, obviously, I'm so sorry you've had to live through family members going through it. Especially, you know, what a heartwarming thing for your family to your parents specifically to bring in somebody else with HD and to take care of them. And not a lot of people would do that. And so that really speaks a lot of your parents and their compassion.
Because it is a really, you know, my mom would speak about how her dad was sent off to a hospital and she just wanted him to come home. And my grandmother, before she passed away, talked to me about how aggressive he was. And it was very hard. There was no help either. There was nobody, they couldn't afford to have a nurse full time. I mean, it was as much as you want your family there, meaning your family who's afflicted with HD, my grandmother was working two jobs trying to support kids by herself. And as I got older, I understood all the, and I don't firsthand understand it, but how amazing my grandmother was and how much she had to go through with having a spouse who had HD and trying to raise two kids and then not knowing if her kids were going to get it. Also watching, you know, her friend, because my grandfather and his sister were my grandmother's best friends. And to watch them both, you know, my grandmother would just, to the day she died, just choke up about it and not really be able to talk about it, which is understandable. I will never understand how that felt, but I know that with as much grace and love, my family tried the best to take care of the people who were afflicted. And that's the most devastating part. I really feel like it's so hard for so many families. And I wish it was different for, I wish there was an ability to bring your family home, because those moments were really, you know, heartfelt for my uncle. And my cousin Carolyn, before she passed away, she said, you know, even my mom didn't do that. She said, you and your family are like a second family to me, because you brought my dad home and she would come over and we would spend time with him and things like that. And, you know, and I don't fault anybody for not doing that. I just know that that's the only thing we could do. We wanted to have him have some normalcy for as long as possible.
And that's huge. I think that people tend to forget how much that means to somebody, you know, who is struggling with a neurodegenerative disease in general, but specifically with HD, because as the person may seem to lose their voice, they're still aware of mm-hmm. stuff. And so they haven't lost themselves. They're still in there. And so for somebody to realize that and to say, okay, I'm going to take the time and make the extra effort to bring some of that back for you and bring some of that normal back and show compassion like that, that's huge. You know, I just don't see it as much as I would like. And so that says a lot about your family and also your heart, right? Because you want to continue to have that compassion for the HD community.
It is something that I really, I wish that, and that's the hardest part about this disease, is that it is, you know, the ability to communicate goes away, but you're still there. That's the part that's the most devastating, but being able to still communicate with them. You know, I wrote my cousin when she was in a hospital, I wrote the nurses their letters to read to her. And, you know, I know it was because she had the greatest sense of humor. She was really sassy and really funny. And I would just tell her about what was going on with me. And I would say, like, and the nurses would kind of blush sometimes when I would like write stuff that was like, just sassy and kind of like, cause she just had this kind of like naughty sense of humor. So I would call the nurses and I would go, sorry that I wrote this in a note, but just read it to her, cause she'll laugh. And they would say she would laugh. She would have this moment. Awesome. So it's like, you knew she was still in there. And so yeah. I guess I would encourage people who have HD in their family and going and visiting, like, there's the hardest part. And the thing I did see about my mom and my dad was that, yes, there's the devastation. Of course, you're watching someone slowly suffer and pass away and all of those absolutely devastating things. But the person that they are is still there. And so talk to them like you would when they didn't have HD. Make them feel a little bit of normalcy. It will really bring you joy and them joy and remind you of the greatest parts of them. And that's what we have done in our family. And, you know, and that's kind of honoring the person. That makes sense.
100%. 100%. You also said something that I wrote down. So your grandfather was in the Navy, is what you said, right?
Yeah.
My grandfather with HD was in the Navy.
Oh my gosh. So, my grandfather was a chief petty officer in the Navy and actually had a joke book that he collected jokes from the Navy. And my mom, I mean, I still have the joke book. We used to tell those jokes all the way, like, to everybody. Like, so
I've been told I should write a book of dadisms for my dad because he was hilarious and like had the best sense of humor. And one of the doctors who saw him regularly was like, you really just need to actually write all of these down in a book and do a, like a book of dadisms, because he just had some great ones. So that's
you
so
should
funny.
You absolutely should, because that's like what I was saying, is honoring the humor that was the person and not only thinking of them as the disease that took them.
Right.
And it's hard because, like, I think about people who have any other kind of disease. I don't know. I feel like with HD, it's like sometimes that's the lasting memory we have of them. Sometimes. And I always try to remember, and I didn't know my grandfather at all, but I try to read the joke books from the Navy and think about the, you know, see some of the pictures of him and hear the stories that my family would tell and how funny he was and how full of life he was. And that's how I try to honor and remember him and not the fact that he got afflicted with HD.
Yeah, that's awesome. It's incredible. So with HD being in your family and having this experience, obviously it has shaped who you are. It's shaped your future. You know, how has that come about? Obviously you went off and you're living your life to the fullest. And we were talking a little bit about Katie Moser earlier and how positive she is. So let's talk about that a little bit, about just being positive and living life to the fullest and how it has shaped your life.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that moment when my mom got tested in 93 and I had the sliding doors moment thinking about what if she had it, I would not have gone to New York. I know that because I made that choice in my head. No one was going to sway me, because I thought, well, I don't have a lot of time with her and I'm not going to go off and do something selfish like being a dancer on Broadway. That seems silly to me. And I know what she would have said. I know, because we had this conversation. I said, Mom, what if you did test positive? And she said, I would not have allowed you to stay. I would have wanted you to go off and live your life to the fullest, because I wasn't able to. And it's just, you know, trying not to choke up thinking about that, but that moment really did just, sorry.
It's okay.
It's a moment that I'm like, yeah, I had this choice and she was able to live her life. And she, you know, before that, my dad and her had the conversation of having kids, which I also know is a big thing with people who have HD in their family. It was for my cousin. She really wanted to be a mom, but she refused, because I think in the back of her mind, she may have known she had it. It was the big elephant in the room we didn't talk about. She didn't get tested. She just started showing symptoms. And, but my mom and my dad, before they were married, had a they talk about it. It's the conversation in the car. It's very known in my family. And, my mom was in just absolute tears. She said, I'm going to take you to see my dad in the hospital because I want you to know what you may be in for. I don't think you want to marry me. And my dad said, I got you. No matter what, I got you. And I'm like, oh, my dad is quite possibly one of the greatest men I know. And they went and saw my grandfather, and my dad, throughout it all, he said, I just knew whatever happened, I would take care of her. And so that moment of like getting the test, it was like, woo. And I know the community I'm talking to right now knows that feeling. And it just was a launching point for me. And really, regardless of what the test would have said, I feel like, and I've always had this in me, I don't know if I got it from my mother or my father. They're both very, very passionate people. But I said, nothing's going to stop me from doing what I love, helping people along the way. living my life to the fullest. Now, of course, I have moments of frustration and all the things that we do in life. You know, it's not all sunshine and roses. And you read my resume off before, and I was like, oh yeah, I've done some stuff. But it's the waking up every day and going, I'm so lucky to be here, that I've really, it's become habitual to me from the time I was young. And I don't know if that was a learned habit, if that was just, if it's just a choice, but I do really wake up every day and I say, thank you to my body. Thank you to my life. Thank you to my friends. Thank you to you for having me on this podcast. Thank you for my voice, like all these things. And I really do top to bottom try to start my day that way and go forward with whatever it is I want to do in a fearless way, because life is amazing. And why not have that be your first thought of the day? That sounds easy. You know, I don't have HD in my family anymore. I'm not sitting here looking at, staring it in the face anymore. And, but that's where I feel like I have to live my life to the fullest for the family members who didn't get to.
Right. Right. You have, this is one of the topics that I've heard a lot in the community. you know, there's a lot of survivor's guilt for people who their test is negative. And I was telling a good friend of mine, I said, I never sit there and think, oh God, well, they tested negative. You know, why did they get to and I didn't? That never crosses my mind. It's always, oh my God, I'm so glad they tested negative and they're not going to have to deal with this part of it. But that doesn't mean they're no longer part of HD, because you're still dealing as a family member and learning how to cope. And there's now a responsibility of being a voice for the ones who do have it. And, you know, and that's where we as people with HD need that, right? We need those people who are negative, who are able to have the voice when we can't have it anymore. So I hope that anybody who has dealt with the survivor's guilt and with this feeling of, you know, I don't have to deal with it, realize like you're still very much part of it. You know, it's always going to be because you've lived with it, even as a caregiver, as, you know, a family member, it's still a part of you. And so I know that people still have this feeling of a responsibility to be a voice for those of us who will lose ours. And it's a great thing. And so I love that you, that's how you wake up, that you're so grateful and you live life to the fullest and as a way to honor those that came before you. That's a great way to be.
And it is, yes. And thank you. I do know there are people out there who can't feel that way. They're so mad. They're so bitter. They're so frustrated or angry at grieving. Yeah. It's, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross book, Five Stages of Grief. I've read many times.
Yeah.
And that's okay. All those feelings are still okay. Mm-hmm. And also a lot of my family members and a lot of people in this community who just, they have to not focus on it or even talk about it, or they just want to forget. And that's also okay. It's not like my way is the only way. My way is what I chose. I chose to live my life that way and forgive the fact that my family and so many families have this disease. And there is that, you know, Russian roulette of like, you may get it, you may not, who knows? And, but it, I don't know. That's why I say, I don't know where I got that from, where I go, I'm going to live my life to the fullest, because you can very well go into the dark place and be really angry. And as that book, Five Stages of Grief, tells you, those feelings, it doesn't go in order. Like, you know, there's right. denial and all that
exactly.
stuff. You can just go, but I feel like And I've been through that with my cousin, like, why her? Why this? When she's the only one I knew from healthy to all the way to the end. And I went through those dark moments too. So I don't want anyone to think that I'm just, everything is so sunny and happy. And I jump out of bed. And there are those dark moments of why my family? Why is this still around? Why is this happening? What can we do? All of those frustrations, but I do try to end and come back to gratitude as much as I can.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I love too that you brought up the fact that the stages of grief are not in an order, that it literally can change all different orders. It could be different from 1 minute to the next. And I think that's very important to know, especially for those of us in the community, because all of us are grieving in some way. But because of whether you're positive, you're negative, you're a caregiver who's not directly affected, or you are a caregiver who is directly affected, you're at risk, or you've tested, or you're symptomatic, whatever it is, we all have different perspectives because we're in different stages of life, which means we're in different stages of grief. And it's constant grief. It's this anticipatory grief, but it's that grief is always there. And so those stages are constantly changing. And that's such a good point.
Yeah, it's hard sometimes to not, this is why you need a community like this, because it's hard to have to explain what this is or what it feels like. Even just kind of explaining what the disease is sometimes is going through the five stages of grief. Like it really, there are moments when I go through my day and I forget. Because I think sometimes, and that's part of grief, is that you have to just shove it kind of back because you want to live your life. And then you get to, you're watching a TV show and they bring up HD out of nowhere. And you all of a sudden just, your whole body just gets mad, or you start crying, or you just, it, all of that is all a part of it. And to have a community that understands that is huge. It's a support. And you're right, going back to what you said about the survivor's guilt, I really do almost sometimes to like a manic point, like I have to live my life so full because nobody else could. And that's my survivor's guilt. Like I have to chill out sometimes. You see, like you read off all the things I'm doing. I'm like, oh gosh, I need to take a vacation too. Like I need to. And I'm a mom of two. You didn't say that, but I do have like two
Yeah.
boys, very energetic and all
It's
that
so
stuff.
funny your response when you were like, "Oh gosh, I've done a lot," 'cause my cousin recently brought up the fact, like, "Do you realize all of these things that you've done?" I was like, "Oh, no." 'Cause I just did them, right? Like you just go, "Okay, well, when you see a need, you just move in that direction and you do it." And so
Yeah.
that was so funny seeing your response to that because I know very well what that's like. Yeah, but
And that's the work. I mean, that's where you are a warrior mom, and there's so many people out there who are just incredible people in this world who just go through life helping and seeing where can I help? What can I do? And how can I support the community? And
yeah,
yeah,
because
I mean, I feel like I haven't done enough.
not only do you do all of the Hollywood stuff, you're also a holistic coach. You do your podcast, you're an author, you're a parent, like you're constantly going. Yeah.
It's crazy. And I live in Montana now, which is really
Nice.
is a really different, whole different environment, having come from New York City and Los Angeles. I've lived in both those cities for over 10 years and 20
Yeah,
years in New York.
completely different.
Yeah. And but I come from Pleasant Hill, California, which was used to be a smaller farm town, and now I live in a smaller farm, kind of smaller town, Whitefish, Montana, which is growing. But yeah, I'm constantly doing so much. But it's funny because I feel like whenever I do anything for the Huntington's Disease Society of America, or I do something like a podcast like this, and I did talk about HD in my book as well, because I really felt, and I had some people in the community who read it, who when they got to that point, it's kind of like when a TV show mentions HD. They weren't expecting it. They didn't know I was going to talk about it. And I did, of course. And they wrote me notes saying, thank you. And I part of me goes, I'm not doing enough for the community. Isn't that funny? Cause I feel like I'm doing a lot, but I'm also like, I just want to stand on top of a mountain and just tell everybody, how can we eradicate this disease? How can we move forward faster with research? How can we get help and figure out? I mean, it's just, I just for gosh, my whole life have just wanted that. And I, as everybody who has heard about HD or is in the community wants the same.
Do you find it hard to talk to other celebrities? Like, do you find it hard to, because you had mentioned just explaining to people how hard it is to do that. Like, is it harder to do that in an environment like Hollywood and talking with celebrities? Because everybody has their own things that they support, obviously, but also just because of the lack of knowledge about HD.
I don't, you know, what's funny is that I, one of my first, curtains up for a cure that Katie and I did in New York, I reached out to Julie Andrews because I had worked with her, and she actually has been a part of, Neurological Association. I don't know the exact,
Hereditary Disease Foundation. Yeah.
Yes. She's been a part of that for a long time. And every celebrity that I've reached out to either donate an item for something or do, like my friend Dan Castellaneta, who's the voice of Homer Simpson, when we did the Freeze HD event, he did the voice of Homer and said, let's freeze HD. And it was really, none of them have ever, everybody has been like, oh my God. Most of them have not known about the disease. Yes. Yeah. But every celebrity that I've reached out to that I've worked with has wanted to be a part of it and wanted to help. Awesome. But most of them have not known about it. And when I explain it, especially when I was working with the Broadway stars in New York and they were singing, the first year we did Curtains Up for a Cure, we had some videos playing about juvenile HD.
Yeah.
And then after that, we would have people sing. And my friend Carol, who was, she didn't know these videos were coming. And I felt terrible because I didn't really warn them that this was, there was going to be a story. And then she had to sing. And she was in tears and just couldn't, you know, just was choked up. And if you're a singer, you can't sing when you're crying. No. But everybody who's been a part of these events, the Ritter family also, who does a lot with Freeze HD, has just been so incredibly supportive and done anything they could with their voice to support and bring it to more mainstream, which, you know, when I was a kid, it was hidden, not talked about. My grandfather's parents, I believe my mom said that they were often a mental institution. So it was basically, this happens, you start getting symptoms, we ship you off, and you didn't, and then the family shuts down and doesn't talk about it. So to have it, that be my grandfather's community to now, having so much of a voice, having it be in TV shows, having it be connected with celebrities, and the voice that we are able to bring to it is just, I wish it was even more than that, but that's something that I'm so grateful for, that we are talking about it so much more than they used to.
Oh, we get all excited in the community. Like, we all start sharing episodes and shows as we start seeing things. Because we love that now it's being talked about. And then we also sit there and go, okay, well, how did they portray it? So, you know, looking at, oh, did they do a good job? Where you have some that do a great job of it and others who are like, they didn't research enough. So it's really interesting to see it.
And
now,
it's funny, because I actually, not that I don't, like we were talking about, I have plenty going on, but I wrote a treatment for a movie that was about my story, actually, of my mom getting tested and me going off and being a dancer. But it was, she did have the disease.
Yeah.
So it was the opposite. And I had a friend who read it and they're like, this is such an interesting story. And it's kind of like the movie Beaches, how that cardiomyopathy is a very rare heart disease, and people don't know, unless you are in the cardiomyopathy world, you don't know that that movie has anything to do with that. You just know it's about friends,
right?
And about growing together and one of them passing away. But with this treatment of this movie, talking about that, I had a friend of mine who's in the business and said, well, who would play your mom? And I was like, well, I don't know if anybody's going to portray the symptoms of HD the way that I would know how to. I don't feel like my, would want to play my mother. I think that would be probably, as an actress, one of the most difficult things to do.
Yeah.
But there's a part of me that I would want to honor all those people in my life and honor the disease correctly. But I do believe if they ever did a movie with HD in it, where they were symptomatic, I feel like that person would honor the community and really portray it correctly.
Yeah.
You know, as hard as it would be physically, very hard to
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Do that and do it believably. But anyway, that's something I still think about doing a movie, and whether I'm in it or not, producing it for the community. So if there's anyone in Hollywood
that.
listening who wants to do that.
I'd love to see that personally. I think, well, the whole community would show up.
Yeah.
So we would all be like, oh yes, we're going to go see this. Yeah, no, I would
it
love
would
to
be
see that.
It would be a story, and this is where it would be more of a story of family. It would be more of a story of a mother daughter and a family connection.
Absolutely.
Than the disease, because that's one of the things that I find, you know, you don't want to be identified by the disease. You want to be identified by the family that you're in and the love that you have and the support. And like we were talking about before, the people that you are still behind all those symptoms. And that's what the movie Beaches is that connection. And so how important that is, and that love of life and love of family is really, you know, that
well, and you
it
could
you would just
probably go beyond
disease.
that
Yeah.
and even look at the connection of friendship within the community, because we're such a tight-knit community. And so the friendships that we build within the community, because we all understand what we're going through, versus not necessarily building those friendships outside of the community. It's a whole other thing, just like your friendship with Katie. And it's just another level, right? Like, of a special type of relationship that becomes more like family. So even delving into something like that would be amazing.
Katie Moser, she feels like family, and all the people that I've met within the community, they really do. They feel like family, and all the things we've done together. And I had my boys and my husband and I perform for Freeze HD. This is in 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And just everybody that we met there was just like, they just enveloped us as family. And that's how we feel about that community in Los Angeles and here. And I've even had a representative from the HDSA here in Western Montana. Like, I guess there's a Montana branch of HD,
A
and I'm like,
chapter, yeah, they're split up to chapters.
I said, let's do something together. Let's absolutely like connect. And it's just, anytime anyone reaches out, I'm literally like, what can I do to help? And how can I be there for everybody? So.
Awesome. And so we're talking about Katie Moser. So I'm going to go back to that for a minute. So Katie Moser and you met through Curtains Up for a Cure.
Yes.
Which was an event that you guys put on in New York.
In New York. But we had met before then. Because I was doing a lot with HDSA in New York, and just I was starring on Broadway at the time. And I was like, I'm in a position where people are going to pay attention to me. And so I was like, what can I do? And how can I be a part of it? So I did, you know, there was like a HD walk, I think I don't remember actually. And Moser would know, I call her Moser, I never call her Katie. Moser would know when I exactly met her, probably, but it just feels like I've always known her.
Yeah.
But I read her article in the New York Times.
Yeah.
And I just was like, you are such an incredible young woman. And we just started talking about our histories and talking about her, testing positive. And I, you know, just, I'm like, I just think she's incredible. And we were like, what can we do together? And so Curtains Up for a Cure, we started and we did that concert for a long time and really raised awareness within the Broadway community and the New York chapter. And it was just, it just felt good, you know, and it just, she became like a sister to me through that.
She's incredible. You know, like I was telling you, I got to meet her right after I tested when I went to my first HDSA convention. And, you know, I was 20 and life-changing to meet people who are determined to live their lives and to not let the disease just take over. And so she was that for me. She was a powerhouse, and she still is. And I loved the article. And I was telling you too about how it really made me sit there and go, well, I can speak up too. If she's able to speak up, I can speak up and not be afraid. And meeting her in person too, and just how she's so funny and just so down to earth. And I just love her. So yeah, I mean, truly just made me realize like it's very possible to speak up and to live your life and in a more positive way.
And I wonder if Moser knows, well, Moser, you're listening, I'm sure. I wonder if she knows the ripple effect of positivity that she's created in this community and what her article, that one article, and I don't know the journalist that wrote it, but I'm thanking them as well, did for so many people. You know, just your one story. I know that to me, I'd never seen an article in the New York Times about HD at all. So it was just life-changing mm-hmm. for that. But yeah, Moser is just, she's the best. She's great.
She is. She
yeah.
Is. So you did Curtains Up for a Cure. You've done the Freeze HD event, which you hosted in 2022. I remember seeing the photos and stuff, and I was so excited about seeing all of those. I was living vicariously through all of the photos.
Yeah, it was a wonderful, it was such a wonderful event. And I, upon walking into the theater, just was in tears. And I was like, you know, oh my God, how much this has grown over the years is just so incredible. You know, I still want to see an event at like Madison Square Garden, or I want to see an event at like, you know, on a ginormous scale, just because that, you know, that to me feels like that's honoring all of the people who've passed before us in terms of the awareness of it. But it is just incredible what HDSA has done with that event and so many events throughout the year and throughout the years, you know.
Definitely has grown. It's great to see that. It's great to see things change, right? And more awareness and that people are more willing to speak up now, I think is such a huge thing.
Yeah. And there's so much, you know, there is so much like science that is going on. I know it's not a cure, but it is, you know, baby steps, very small baby steps towards finding out how to slow down the symptoms and, you know, maybe not stop everything, but that to me, when I read everything that is going on, you know, it was helpful to my cousin. It was helpful to some of the research that had been done and some of the medications that she was able to take, but that's for me would be, yes, Madison Square Garden, but that would be that event maybe at Madison Square Garden would be to announce we have found a cure and there is no more HD. We can stop it. That would be, that's the dream for everybody, you know?
Yeah. I think that personally at this point, I am not holding out for a cure. I am, because of where I am in life and having a neurocognitive disorder related to HD, that's my diagnosis, because I have cognitive and behavioral symptoms, but I don't have movements. So my goal now is to have something that will treat, even if it's for a year or 2 years, to get me to the next thing. That will be 5 years to the next thing until we get to that cure. But that is my hope for right now, is to really just provide quality of life while we're still waiting to get there.
Yeah. And that's that. And I agree with you. That is what would be.
Because I find that if I focus on finding a cure, I find that I'm hopeless, because we're just not there yet. And that's okay, you know, but in order to keep going, like you said, baby steps, break it down and, you know, focus on, okay, what's going to get me maybe a year or two longer so we can get to the 5 years, so we can get, you know, or what's going to take care of people earlier on, so we don't get to the movements. And I think that's more realistic, and I know that sounds terrible, you know.
No, it doesn't. And that's the
way,
that's the realism. Because, you know, I'm in the entertainment industry where you're taught to dream big and have these big dreams and visualize the end result. And that's my Madison Square Garden, is that visualization of the day.
And it's a great thing to have.
But it will bring you to a dark place of having no hope if you are day to day thinking of that.
Yeah.
And that's the only choice.
Right.
The other choices are leading up to that. Okay, so that's not here yet. So until then, what can we do to do all the things you were saying, which I agree. And I, that those are the baby steps, and those are the moments of hope that will bring us to that Madison Square Garden dream, you know?
Yeah. And sometimes you just have to focus on those things more so. 'Cause I found what I did personally was, you know, when I tested, they were saying a lot about, okay, we're going to get a cure. We're going to, you know, that's what we're focused on. And as time passed and we didn't get any closer to it, I lost hope. And I did go to that dark place. And I was like, what's the point of doing any of this? And then when I became a caregiver for my father, and, you know, I'm watching what he's going through, that made it worse. And so I had to go back and go, okay, I've got to focus on what's real in front of me and what I can do now, because I'm very much a solutions person. So I'm very much like, okay, well, where can I make the change now to help this go beyond? And so, I've had to deal with it in that way in order to stay out of that dark hole.
Yeah. And this is something that I just thought about, that I know I'm a big believer in and have used my entire life, which is therapy and going to speak about and having support. And sometimes it's hard when the therapist doesn't know what HD is or even know what that is, but having a community to talk to, but also an individual therapist, if that's the place that you need to go to navigate these ups and downs and feelings and five stages of grief and all of it. I feel like that's the holistic health coach part of me, is go to the root cause and see how we can move through all of those, you know, those hopeless moments and get back to a center, but also knowing that those are emotions that need to come out of your body and you need to process too. So those people who are in a dark place right now, yes, of course, you don't want to be there forever, but you want to process those feelings as we go towards trying to find hope.
As a holistic health coach, so why is it important to process those feelings? Like, what could it what could it do to you if you don't process feelings?
Well, there's something, this is another, I graduated from the National Holistic Institute in Los Angeles as a licensed massage therapist. And this was a side hustle, because if you're an actor in the business, you don't work all the time. So you always have to have some side hustles. And I was really interested in how the body works and emotions, because I've had massage therapy as a dancer and as an athlete for a long time. And I would have what's called, what the therapist would call, emotional release, which to me was laughter. They would, hit a, because I was dancing 8 shows a week, so I had all this tension in my body. And so they would get into a knot and I would start laughing. And it was just kind of strange. And they said, "Oh, that's emotional release. And you need to let that out." And then I would sometimes they would hit a spot of my body and I would cry. And that's also emotional release. So what I learned from going to this National Holistic Institute was, but your body stores emotions. This is like very woo-woo and like may sound like, oh yeah, right. But it really, if you've never had a massage, you never had body work done, and I'm very connected to my body being a dancer, you may be surprised by this, or maybe like, that's not true. But there is a lot of emotion that's stuck and can get stuck in your body. And I'm not just talking about your muscles. It can be stuck in your throat. It can be stuck in, in Eastern medicine, there's chakras. It can be stuck in your stomach, and you can have stomach problems because your emotions all go to one place and you don't let them out. And so it is important to have that emotional release, obviously in a appropriate place, not at the grocery store, which, if I saw someone having emotional release at the grocery store, I would send them kindness and love and hope that, I would walk away and hope that they were okay. But I say that because not a lot of people really pay attention to emotions. They feel like, oh, I have to hold it together all the time, especially someone that's a caregiver. There is this ripple effect, a ripple
Totally
effect.
me, yeah.
Yeah, you may not have HD, but you're taking care of people who do, the nurses of the world, family members of the world. And that moment of going off and having that release for yourself, whether it's anger, sadness, rage, hopelessness, getting that out and getting it out in a healthy way, or an unhealthy way, if that's the only way you can get it out. I don't know. Like as a health coach, I would try to guide someone to get it out in a healthy way. But massage therapy for that is, a lot of people think it's just, ooh, a spa day, but there is really a therapeutic release in that for your body.
For sure. I've always loved when I've been able to go and get massages, which is few and far between, but there really is something to that, because when you look at statistics for caregivers, and because the majority do hold it in. I personally remember just having to remain numb in order to survive, and so during that time, my health was at the worst place ever. And once I started finally processing all of my feelings and allowing myself to go through the grieving process, that's when things start getting better for health. And I looked at statistics for caregivers, and that's very common. It's very common for caregivers to hold all of it in. Their health gets affected. They could have heart attacks. They could have, all kinds of issues, because of being a caregiver. I mean, they're just at higher risk for those things. And it makes sense that a lot of it is due to holding in emotions that you feel like you can't share because you have to be strong for that person. So there really is something to it.
Or, I imagine with you having to take care of your dad and then staring down what may be happening to you,
Yes.
that is a whole other layer that is deeper than just maybe a nurse that's taking care of somebody. That is the thing that my cousin went through with her dad, and she denied it for a long time until it was undeniable. And it was just, she would have those emotional moments with me, and I just let her cry and just held on to her and did everything I could to support her. So That's a different, and that to me, I feel like is something that we will, you'll go numb because you don't really want to think about it. It's really not something that you want to face. And those moments where you face it and letting it out is therapeutic. So think I even in just the grief of my mother passed away, just she didn't pass away from HD, but she passed away in 2022.
Sorry.
And it just the five stages of grief come up, and they come up at the most strange moments, and it can just come up out of nowhere. And I try to honor that and let it out for that help, for the health of myself. And because I know the person that I'm grieving, even if it's myself, would want me to take care of my body. So all those layers, I mean, it's just so layered, right? It really is. And it's
It is.
you can't live in that stuck place forever, but being in that place to get it out of your body is very, very smart. And if you can shift it somehow to, I have to get this out, and be around people who are supportive, and you're in a safe place where you feel you can, do it.
For sure. Absolutely. And I've definitely found those people have been part of the HD community, because there are others who just can't understand, or it's just too much, right? Like people who are not, who have never dealt with it, they're not used to that much emotion, that much. It's just overwhelming for them. And so they
Or
tend to just.
do you find that if you are, I found this, if you're having a moment of sometimes anger, sadness, whatever, like the very intense emotion about HD, if you're with somebody who doesn't have it in their family, has never seen anyone with it, doesn't understand, I found myself feeling like I don't want to, even if they're the most supportive person, sometimes I'm like, I don't want to talk to you because you don't get it.
Yes.
And I'm looking in your eyes and I feel pity, or I feel, and it's making me more mad. Like that's, I've been there before, and then I've apologized later on, being like, oh my God, I'm so sorry. I knew you were trying to be there for me, but there's this thing that I can't explain where it makes me mad to have to even explain to you what the disease is. And it's not your fault. You're there, you're trying to help me, but I don't want to explain it. I just want to know. I just want to look in someone's eyes and know that they know how
Exactly.
this feels. You know what I mean?
And
It's a weird
who,
thing.
because they know, you don't have to explain it. Like you can share those feelings and know that they legitimately get it. And like you said, it's not that other person's fault, but they can't give in that moment what you need. And so, yeah, I found myself cutting myself off from that and just going, you know what, I can't, like, I just close off and then I'll find my support with my people in the community.
Yeah, and but isn't that, this is where I feel like sometimes that may be the wrong choice, because that's giving them education as to what this is. And so when they are maybe in the world and they hear about HD, they're going to talk about it. So and maybe not in that moment of like a dark place that you talk to them about it, but later on you let them in and you voice about HD, or say, here, let me show you what this is, or explain to you what it is, because that's the job of us as survivors, to help educate people. And
I've had such mixed responses. And so I've had some people who, yes, they're very interested in learning more when I come back to it. And, you know, I try to explain and they'll then go back and research and they'll come back and talk to me. And then I've had other people who were literally best friends who I was so close to. And they literally just were like, no, it's too much. And so I couldn't even go any further with it. And I lost friends just because they could not handle the emotion, the amount of stuff that it is, because people are not, they're not used to dealing with it, you know,
Yeah,
that
and
amount of stuff.
that's them numbing out. That's them numbing out. And I would, As painful as that must have been, I'm so sorry that that happened. I mean, I'm sure, and I never really dove deep into it. I'm sure that my cousin, my uncle, my great aunt, and my grandfather had the same people. Just like I don't want to hear about it. You know, I just want to move on and pretend like this stuff doesn't exist, but it does, and that is like I call it a bless and release moment where I go, that's not about me. That's about you. In this moment, you can't handle it. And that's okay. And I'm not going to fault you for where you are in this, in your life, or where you are with me. I will find my tribe in another way. Because that's happened to me. I mean, it hasn't happened to me because of HD, but I've had people just be like, oh, I, bye. Like,
yeah.
Friends who were kind of aren't friends anymore because of something that, you know, difficult that happened in my life or whatever. And that's when you find who is your tribe. That's, I keep saying it over and over again, who is your community?
Yeah. I've even dealt with, and it's something that sticks in my head. So it's one of the things I've brought up before, but it's, I had somebody really close to me say that, I needed to stop focusing so much on the HD and focus more on my kids. Well, I homeschool my kids. I'm with my kids every single day. That doesn't mean that I can't be an advocate for HD. It doesn't mean that I can't go and participate in a clinical trial. And it doesn't mean, like, would you tell somebody with brain cancer that to not advocate for their disease? You know, it's crazy.
It's a strange thing to say, because in doing all the things you're doing for HD, you are, it's going to make me cry. Woo. You are spending time with your kids. You are showing them the warrior that you are. So
yeah,
that person doesn't know what you're doing in the world, and that's okay. That's on them, and bless and release that person. Yeah. You are somebody who, we're getting to know each other, and now I'm in your tribe. So I'm somebody who is completely lifting you up in this world, because you are doing all the things like this podcast, like using your voice, and you're showing your kids, just like my cousin. Oh, I'm so emotional today. I'm sorry. I'm like, you know, it's just, it, you know, and I don't obviously let it out, Mare. I don't hide my emotions. I let them out, but I'm like I'm showing my family by using my voice on this podcast. You're doing the same. So that's the most incredible thing for your children, to be able to go back and listen to your podcast in its entirety and go, Mom was incredible. You know, Mom's a warrior. Mom is like using her voice to not only homeschool us, take care of our grandfather, take care of us, and live your life and connect every single day with them.
Yeah, thank you. That means a lot, because, you know, I'm very open and honest with my kids, and I've always wanted to be, you know, open about HD and stuff. And so, like, I have this tattoo that says Cure HD on my wrist, and my 5-year-old asked me, because she knew that her papa, my dad passed away in January of 2021, but she knew her papa had Huntington's. And so she stared at it one day and she says, Mama, what does that say? What's the top word? And I said, it says cure. She said, so that's Cure HD. And I said, yeah. And she goes, is that why you do so many meetings? And I said, yeah, baby, that's why I do so many meetings. And she goes, okay, well, I won't give you a hard time ever again. I can do as many meetings as I want, as you want. And I was just like bawling, because here my 5-year-old is just so caring about it, more so than friends and other family members. And it was just eye-opening for me, that I must be doing something right to have such an incredible little girl.
Oh my gosh. And that's incredible. And I think that she doesn't know the entirety of it yet, just like I didn't when I was a little kid
with
my uncle coming home, and my sisters and I and my brother and I, we talk about how that was a little scary to see him because he was fully symptomatic and we didn't really understand, but my parents were very simple with the explanation at the time. And as I got older and as I really let it sink in what they did, it just was the, you know, like we said, it's what your daughter's going to see as she starts to really fully understand it and the community and the support and what you're doing for so many people with your voice is huge. And I love that it's not in the shadows anymore. I love that you have it right there on your wrist. You know, I love that you,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that to me, I think is just so important in this world.
I have a healer's hand with it. The healer's hand is supposed to promote good energy. And so I got that, oh my God, years and years ago, 2009, just because, yeah, it was the same idea of, I want to start a conversation and the best way is a tattoo, right? Because everybody asks,
yeah.
Well, what's HD? So,
yeah.
Yeah.
You're doing all the things that, you know, I always say what other people bring to it is kind of about them and they don't know the entirety, and blessing and releasing them and knowing that I'm doing what's in my heart, what I feel is best, and balancing the love of family and the love of your children and all the things, and helping this community is just huge. So I'm thanking you from the bottom of my heart for all that you're doing, for asking me to be on this podcast, to let me use my voice as well. The ripple effect that you're creating, I don't think you will fully know in your lifetime, you know, but we all are witnessing it, and it's incredible for so many people who are listening.
Thank you. And thank you so much for coming on. I've had such a blast talking to you. It's been so nice, Meredith. And I hope that we can talk again.
Yes, I would. Anytime you ever want me on, I'm here. I would love it. Absolutely.
Awesome. Did you have any final thoughts for the community before I let you go?
Oh my gosh. Just stay strong and live your life to the fullest. Lift each other up. And when you are in those moments of being down, know that you have us to lean on.
Thank you so much, Meredith.
Thank you.
So, yeah. And you are welcome back anytime. Seriously, I've had a blast talking with you. For those listening, make sure that you are tuning in every Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Next week, we will have Ashley on from the HDO Ambassadors series that we are doing, and she's going to be sharing her journey with HD and why she became an HDO ambassador. It's going to be a great show. I'm loving the series that we're doing with these youth, younger people who are sharing their stories of whether it's testing or, you know, being a young caregiver, whatever it is that they're dealing with HD, and now becoming ambassadors in all these different countries, you know, across the world, and really trying to be advocates for the HD community. So please make sure that you tune in next week for her show. If you are interested in coming on for our HD Uncut series, which was actually pretty similar to today, where people in the community come on and share whatever they want to share, whatever their thoughts are, feelings are, whatever it is, it's for the HD community to have a voice. So please feel free to email me at lauren@help4hd.org. That's H-E-L-P, the number 4hd.org. If you are interested in coming on to that series, which we do monthly as well. And until next time, guys, take care and love ya.
Thank you for listening. Don't forget to visit www.help4hd.org and sign up for our email newsletter to stay up to date on all that is going on at Help for HD. Get social with us and like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, and subscribe to Help for HD TV on YouTube, and ring the bell for notifications.